Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the Ferris Love Podcast. Today we're joined by Alex Vasquez, the United Nations representative for the International Federation for Family Development. Alex will be speaking with us about how we can promote family well-being at a global level while also kind of talking about how we can build it in our local communities as well. So Alex, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Mary Grace, for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so can you just tell us a little bit about what you do in IFFD and just how that looks when you're representing in the United Nations, all that? Can you just share with us a little bit?
So actually, my job goes both ways. I definitely try to convey the message, challenges, needs, we're talking about today, facts that families face every day to the governments at the UN and the UN system, the UN agencies, etc. And also try to find solutions for the problems of the parents that we reach out to with the trends that are coming from the UN in the global arena. So now we have some trends coming up that we can definitely benefit from each other.
Okay, great. And those trends, are you noticing within just discussing with people in the UN and just throughout the, you know, I'm sure you travel probably a lot, just kind of those biggest challenges that the families are facing these days that you are trying to address? Or
yeah, I mean, we definitely gonna suggest some trends at the UN. I would say the latest trend that we tackled was new technologies. And it was one of our biggest achievements as well, because it was the first time that the UN mentioned in one of the documents parenting, education, and new technologies all around screen addiction, violence, dependency, drug addiction, all related to new technologies. That was one. Another one is urbanization, demographic shifts, migration. And the last one, that was kind of the hardest for us to put together something with climate change, but it's really coming up.
Oh, interesting. Okay, very cool. And how does IFFD work to support the family at like this global level?
So as you know, I mean, IFFD has like two arms that I would say the stronger in 68 countries is the family enrichment part with courses and now personal projects. The spouse initiative, and now the family advocacy that is really how to put that together at the UN. Like, please, can you develop better and more family-friendly policies to support the role of parents as kind of that glue that keeps the family not only working, but together, caring, not only for their parents, for their own parents, but parents for their children and most vulnerable members. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know when you are listening to kind of these policies and things that they're kind of bringing to the table, what is the general consensus about family life? Does the UN see that it's, I'm curious, just like from the UN's perspective, do they see that there is a challenge amongst family life, or it's kind of not really on their high priority list of things to worry about?
So I think one of our, kind of my vision is for them to realize how important the family is. And you have many avenues to put the family, I would say, first. And the first one is population. We don't really tackle that much either in population outcomes. Like the new citizens are coming from parents, and how is that environment nurturing them or not? And the other avenue would be social, like social development, not only population development, but also societal development. That is how good these citizens are for society in terms of social cohesion, social integration, social well-being.
Okay, interesting. And you mentioned the three kind of aspects of that you were working on as initiatives to get UN more aware of in the sense of growing the family. Are there any that like
can relate to the local level that, you know, perfect, like yeah. we talked about, you know, you said, you mentioned climate change, you mentioned, I'm sorry, the other two that you mentioned.
Demographic shifts and.
Yes.
So.
And technologies.
And, stuff, and technology. Yeah. So I will go.
Sure.
For perhaps one by one. The first one is new technologies and definitely the implications of what our children exposed to, but also kind of the benefits that that can have on care, for example. We are seeing in many countries, and especially cities, that for them to reach out to older persons and, in a way, grandparents, they're trying to get telecare that involves the family, but also is somehow a way to track their health. On demographic shifts, it's the UN tradition has been we are overpopulated, and so we have to reduce fertility in a way. Now it's not the case, I would say. It's like we're getting older and living longer.
Yeah.
So that puts us in a position that different countries, I would say, differ. Like one would be, who's going to take care of these people living longer?
Mm-hmm. Oh, good point.
So in one situation, countries can say, I support the family. I would say some really traditional ones say, oh, I support the family. Yeah, they should take care of their own.
Oh.
And other countries say, yeah, but I want to help you in doing that. Well, I'll take care of them, not you.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So both have their pros and cons, and it's definitely breaking many pension systems, either they're public or private, because they were not expecting us living longer. And also they're breaking all the conception of work-family balance and flexible work arrangements. Like, who's going to be at home taking care of the ones in need? Not only children, but older persons. Then you have the urbanization. We have actually a project that really relates from the global arena to the most local situations is the inclusive cities for sustainable families. So we, with some expert, we designed a declaration that is called the Venice Declaration because it was created in Venice with many experts there to make families much more, I mean, make cities much more family friendly. So if you're a mayor or a governor, you can join that commitment. And so far we have 250 mayors and governors around the world committed to those kind of 10 points to make cities in transportation, health, security work with some policies, urban designers, everything, planners. Okay, is this park family friendly or not?
Yeah.
Like we're thinking in many ways, is this building climate friendly or not? Is this wasting a lot of energy or not? So in this case, oh, this avenue, are you keeping in mind the families with children or not, like older persons, things like that. So it's pretty, we're really bringing all those experiences, we call them good practices. They haven't become a policy in the cities yet, but they're just initiatives, in a way, experiments, in a good way, to foster that family sustainability in the cities. I know I'm coming from New York, so it's
difficult you probably to have a
family-friendly city there that where you can actually have a family and your children are good. And you can actually take care of your own parents if they're closer or not. And that resonates definitely in the UN, in UN Habitat, that is the agency of the UN, focusing on urban settlements. And it's definitely creating a lot of attention from the mayors. They really want to join. They don't know how to work out with the UN and family, and we give them that opportunity. Hey, guys, you can actually work with us, and the only thing that you have to do is share your good practices for the family in your jurisdiction, cities or provinces or states.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now, this is coming from kind of more ignorant side, but the UN, like when you bring these policies to the UN and you discuss them, how does – do those policies and those things that you come to conclusions for and like trying to build up the family, how do you communicate that to different governments?
That's
kind of like where I'm like, okay, this is great, but how does that look? Like, let's say you're from New York. discussing with the mayor, but it's a UN policy versus like a, you know, country.
That's a great question because, you know, the UN signed, the member states, even the US, signed in 2015 the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. Mm-hmm. There are several goals that they want to achieve by 2030. And there are like 17 goals with targets within. So it's like many, many commitments to deal with. So for the mayors and governors that are really, really in practical positions, like garbage collection. They're like, don't give me 17 points. Mm-hmm. Give me something much more close to my reality. So we prepare this 10 points that is the Venice Declaration.
Okay.
So we kind of chew that for them a little bit. And in that regard, we come with a UN message to the cities and regions, but also we tell the governments, you should help them because this is your commitment back in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't know about that. Oh yeah, our diplomats made a commitment. No, yeah. Your country made it. And this is the text approved mm-hmm. with this wording, like in terms of, for example, cities, what we have achieved lately, and I think I'll mention three achievements. The first one I already did with the parenting education and new technologies mm-hmm. to introduce that in the UN lingo, as we call it, the language. The second one is intergenerational living arrangements,
mm-hmm.
just to keep in mind in the urban areas, all this intergenerational solidarity that can open to many. And the third one, I would say, it's in terms of family formation and the family decisions for the future, to keep in mind that mental health has an issue there, has a place. Not only because of climate change. Okay, I mean, maybe you, as we always say, maybe you believe it or not, but it's definitely impacting family decisions, either in the youth or in the young families. When they decide how many children they'll have, they have that in mind, that anxiety that is a generalized thing.
Okay, interesting. Wow. Okay, great. Thank you for explaining that and going into that. I'm curious, are there any, when you are meeting, like, I don't know, you probably meet with a lot of different people from different countries and things like that mm-hmm. to discuss these policies. Are there any cultural differences? You mentioned those three, new technologies, parenting, population. Mm-hmm. Like, is that just, I know that is the UN, that's kind of, you've discussed that as a broad, mm-hmm. this is an issue, kind of, we need to discuss these. Are there anything else that are kind of cultural differences that also take effect into the family life?
Definitely. I mean, I'm part of IFFD, and the courses start with the questions to the parents, like, what will you do? Mm-hmm. Like that TV show, what will you do?
Yeah.
And in that case, that's what we ask countries. I mean, what will you do? I mean, we have identified, thanks to experts that we bring from the academia or social services, that you have this problem or you have this challenge. What will you do? And we go along with them to find a solution. Through the process, either designing the policy, evaluating the policy, or before implementing the policy, we raise awareness at the UN. Not only for them to shine, if they're doing a great job, I mean, a country, but to share with other countries where, despite cultural differences, they can agree on. So that's how we tackle, I mean, like, you also were asking, like, for perhaps what would a family-friendly policy is.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the Minister of Women of Ghana in Africa, and she told me, well, a family-friendly policy would be birth registration. I don't know how many should I design a policy for, because I don't know how many are born. But for Italy, it was elderly care, like the role of grandparents at home, because they're aging population. Then I had Brazil. Brazil was like, no, that girls attend school, because they usually stay at home helping their mothers. So they don't break the cycle of poverty. And for the last one was Singapore, that was also in the event. They told me the best family-friendly policy would be to keep people together in the family, because we have identified that when the families have a breakdown, either to war, violence, divorce, we have to take care of the children's challenges, either mental, physical, etc.
Okay.
So,
yeah, there's a lot.
Depending
yeah.
on the realities of the country, either yeah. it's wealthy or not, either it's Muslim or majority Christian, mm-hmm. anything, they all agree on one thing, that is, the family is the first social unit. So anything we invest in that social unit, it will definitely be a cost-effective measure mm-hmm. later on.
Mm-hmm.
For good or bad.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. I am curious, have you experienced any, so let's say there have been some policies in place through the UN that have been there for a while. Have you experienced any that have seen like some great success that you could share with us?
Mm-hmm.
That could be in the United States, you know, that could be in other countries that you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, one, for example, it's really simple, and maybe urban planners will laugh at me, but in Mexico, one of the signatories of this Venice Declaration said, you know, I saw that one of the your recommendations is security and safety in the cities, and for in this case, for the family unit. I'm going to put more lighting overnight during the city. So crime really went down, families went to the parks, even at night because it was too hot. It was in one of the northern cities of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one that we were like, okay, this is interesting. The other one that we really promote was this family perspective, to have families when the policy is designed, not only perhaps social workers or academics, not families.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really working for you or not? So we had that experience in Hungary. I mean, Hungary, for many reasons, I would say unique reasons, is one of the countries with the best family policies in the world. And perhaps one of the reasons is cultural. They just want to ponder on Hungarians
mm-hmm.
and more Hungarians. So they said, to have more Hungarians, what should we do? Okay, why mothers in Hungary are not having more children? And they would say, oh, our schedule is too tight.
Yeah.
Cost of living is too high. We don't have a home. We rent. Okay, so they've been going one by one. Okay, would you have more children if you will have more time? Yeah, flexible work arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
More family, more parental leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll give you the down payment of the house, your first home. And as soon as you have your third child, I'm going to forget about that down payment that you borrowed.
Oh.
So things like that. Or okay, if you have your fourth child, your family will never pay income tax again.
Yeah.
So they really promote mm-hmm. in a positive way. It's like mm-hmm. they're not pushing really hard to have more. In this case, is it fertility driven family policy?
That's excellent. We had someone on the show talking about policies within the United States about like being child-centered and focusing on that, so I love that you mentioned like having it be family focused, and maybe that's what our parents can take from even this interview, is just talking about how can we, as you know, individuals in America too, also consider policies that are being put in place that affect the family, not the individual, which I think we can fall into mm-hmm. here, especially as we worry about the individual rights and all that stuff, our mm-hmm. freedoms, which are goods. But yeah, I think that's a solid, excellent point that you made. If you could, you know, change one thing about, let's say, just from your experience of family life and things like that throughout the world, that you could hopefully make better for families. Like if there was one overall like encompassing policy, what would that be for you?
I would say listen to the others. I think lately the UN has been really polarized. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that everywhere. I think that also comes from the family. Like, oh, I'm not talking to this brother or sibling or sister or parents. And I think when I work at the UN and you might see a country or a delegate or UN agency representative that is far from what you actually think and advocate for,
mm-hmm.
I really try to go and talk to them, like, let's find a common ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally learned that in my own family. Like, okay, this cousin, this aunt, let's go and talk to them. Have a small gesture. What can we agree on? What cannot? Again, this is soft diplomacy. It's not hard diplomacy like wars or big commerce agreements. No, but this is family policies. How can we make our societies flourish for later? And let's talk to each other. I know sometimes European Union members, they don't even talk to each other, but like, no, we're here. You have a union in Brussels.
Yeah.
You have to talk.
That's right. Okay. Interesting. Great. Okay. So then another question for our families. How can like a parents listening to this podcast now contribute to their local, their local governments, their state, you know, their family life in general to help build up that positive, you mentioned dialogue, which I think is extremely incredible and important, but anything else that you can think of that families can do, maybe, you know, starting small and helping to influence that.
Yeah, actually, one of my messages for this conference was that keep on trying to improve. And it's your skills, you know, like with the family enrichment courses, we try to really skill build on parents for them to do a better job. But it's true that it's not only that, but to speak up to, for example, a mayor, like, you can we have a decision on this as well? Mm-hmm. Get involved. I know it's not for everybody, but we've seen that as soon as you show some interest, especially in local communities and the most local things, that they are like, okay, thank you for this, I really appreciate, we're gonna try to do it. I know there are many that might not be, but you mentioned before, it's true that only individuals have rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole group of the family, they don't have a right. You have a right as a member of the family. Mm-hmm. But to keep and preserve those rights, you really have to pay attention to all the needs within the family. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it's true that you can decide, because it's your freedom, not to form a family. Mm-hmm. But then it comes, who cares for you and who doesn't? Because you're always going to be part of the family. You're not here, just an alien coming in.
Yeah.
But even if you decide not to, I don't know, get married, form a family, or even you're alone, you are part of a family, and somebody has been taking care of you in the past, and somebody who's going to have to take care of you later.
Yeah.
So just to keep that in mind.
Mm. Any final thoughts that you can share?
I mean, we talked about dialogue, and when we are at the UN and we see all these polarized movements, either religious movements from any extreme or ideologies, I always say, let's talk. I mean, at the UN especially, that building was actually built for that. The only weapon is your voice. Let's try to agree on this. There's no divisions. There's just rooms. You might be right next to a country that you're at war with.
Yeah.
And you have to sit down and talk.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing. Like, the other one is also part of the family. The other one is also taking care of a family. And perhaps we don't like some ideas, but that was the reason why that building was even paid by the U.S.
Yeah, wow. Okay. That's a great point.
Like, this is a talk. Like, yeah. Well, we came for wars and bombs, so let's try to talk.
Yeah, that's great. And
it's in the other side of the aisle.
Yeah. No, that's true. And that's, I mean, we're finding that too with families nowadays too, that they're kind of more polarized anyways, even with individual families. So that's excellent. Thank you. Where can we find, you mentioned the Venice
declaration.
Can we look that up anywhere?
It's actually under the name citiesforfamilies.org.
Okay.
You'll find it there, all the members.
Very cool.
We're actually having a meeting at the end of the year in Argentina. They're just joining more. Okay. We have in all Europe, cities, many in Brazil, actually. Mm-hmm. The largest are in Brazil, São Paulo, Curitiba, some in Argentina, many, I think the most in Mexico, really small ones.
Mm-hmm.
And we're definitely expanding, but it's becoming a really good thing. Like,
yeah.
Mayors really want to do good stuff. And they're not really stick to many of the political polarization, because they really have to deal with practical things like traffic, commuters,
yeah, lights,
jobs, lights. Yeah. It's like, okay, this doesn't have any political sign. It has to work.
Right. That's excellent. Okay, great. Thank you so much for being on our show and sharing all this. This is really
my pleasure.
Very informative and very good to hear. So thank you. And best of luck with everything at the UN.
Thank you. That.